and welcome to New Books in Digital Culture and Communication Studies. I'm your host, Tal Zalmanovich. Earlier today, I met Nicholas John, yes, we met in person, to discuss his monograph, The Age of Sharing, published recently by Polity Press. Nick traced the origins of the current meanings of sharing and its cultural ascent to a keyword that captures and informs our daily habits and ethics. We discussed the historical context of this shift, its social, political, and economic implications, and wondered if there might be a darker side to sharing. Thank you for joining us. I hope you enjoy our conversation. Joining us today.
It's great to be here.
Would you mind sharing with us the academic journey that led you to this topic?
Yeah, sure. Well, my BA was in social sciences, social and political sciences at Cambridge University. Though I got in as a philosophy student and spent a year studying philosophy before jumping over to social sciences. This was the time, this was in the early 1990s when Anthony Giddens was at the peak of his powers. John Thompson was a young man lecturing about media and capitalism. And really, I think that's kind of set me on my way as a sociologist. My PhD I got from the Department of Sociology and Anthropology at the Hebrew University of Jerusalem. I studied the diffusion of the internet to Israel and kind of its arrival to Israel. It spread throughout Israel. It was kind of like a political, economic analysis of the diffusion of a new technology. My supervisor for that was Professor Avi Luz, and actually, though my PhD, I kind of feel that her voice is less felt there than in the book we're going to talk about today, where I feel that she has quite a strong presence. Mm-hmm. So after finishing my PhD in sociology, I made a leap to a communication department. Mm-hmm. Also at the Hebrew University of Jerusalem, where my plan was to study the diffusion of other technologies to Israel. I was going to write about cable TV. I was going to take my study of the internet through kind of from the mid-1990s through to the present day. But then I noticed the word sharing on internet sites, and I thought, hang on, this is interesting, and this is... And I think it also really enabled me to scratch an itch that I hadn't quite managed to scratch during my PhD, which was that without having any training as a linguist, I have always been fascinated by language. Yeah. And so noticing this word and feeling that there was something to say about it, I just kind of followed my nose and kind of kept digging and finding more interesting things to say about sharing, and then at some point realizing that actually there was probably a book to write, and then writing it, and then and here we are.
Okay, wonderful. Before we actually talk about the arguments in the book, could you just kind of define for us what you mean by sharing, and did sharing always mean the same?
Right, well... What I mean by sharing. The thing is, I think my approach is a pragmatic approach, what linguists call a pragmatic approach. So I'm not a language policeman saying what sharing means or doesn't mean. I will look at how other people use the word and try and understand its meaning through its use. Having said that, I think there are some useful distinctions to make before talking at length about sharing. One is that when we talk about sharing, or at least when, in its original meaning, sharing was very much about division and maybe a bit later distribution. Mm-hmm. So the old English root for the word sharing means groin, which is where the body divides into two legs, the trunk of the body divides. Then in the 16th century, sharing comes to mean dividing. Sharing and shearing are basically the same word. So a ploughshare, I used to think that a ploughshare was shared by the villagers, maybe I was wrong, but that's what I thought naively. A plowshare is called a plowshare because it shares the earth, it divides the earth, and that's what's sharing. So when we share our candies, we're dividing our candies, and that's the original pre-metaphorical sense. Well, maybe the pre-metaphorical sense is this Old English, but I think for now we can think of this physical division as the pre-metaphorical sense of sharing. So that's one thing that it means. Now, though, of course, it also means, it also refers to a type of communication. Sharing is a kind of talk. It's a term for talk. This is much newer, so what we can see is that in addition to what I call a distributive logic of sharing, where we talk about dividing things up, and then we can ask questions about zero-sum games, we can ask questions about the justice of the way things are divided, there is now also a communicative logic to sharing, where sharing means telling. And most often it means telling something that is emotionally significant, right? If I say to you that I have something to share with you, I'm not going to then tell you what time the next bus is arriving.
I'll
tell
you. Disappointing.
Right. I will probably tell you something of emotional significance. Mm-hmm. Right. So this is why sharing is what linguists call it's a performative, it's indicative of a performance. It's, it kind of sets you up to expect a certain kind of talk. Mm-hmm. So I think that's what when people talk about sharing now, they would tend to mean either they're talking about something that's being distributed or divided, or they're talking about an act of communication.
Mm-hmm. So it's still with the definitions a little, as you kind of told us in the introduction, you were born in England, you live and work in Tel Aviv, your book is written in English and analyzes mostly Anglo-American sources. For your purposes, do you feel that sharing is a concept that means the same in all of these locales and indeed around the world?
Well, that's an empirical question that I don't really have a satisfactory answer to. When I teach about sharing to Israeli students, we have in the first lesson a very long discussion about whether this whole story about sharing works in Hebrew. Mm-hmm. And I ask speakers of other languages in my classes, and when I talk about sharing in conferences around the world, I am interested in whether what I have to say about this word in English works. Mm-hmm. Because, for instance, in Hebrew and maybe in other languages, the sense of sharing as division and the sense of sharing as talking have two different words. And so when I want to say that the power of the word sharing is because it brings together a whole set of meanings that kind of bounce off against each other, that doesn't really work in every language. And I'm interested in whether other languages the word that for sharing, say online sharing, carries with it the same meanings or connotations that it does in English. But I'm aware that this is a book about an English word, and absolutely it draws on English, mostly American sources. But I think I declare that at the beginning of the book. I'm not making universal claims here. And also I think that it's that throughout the book I also argue that the context in which sharing came to mean the things that it does is a specific cultural context, and which is a primarily American one.
Although the sites that you do talk about, such as Facebook, are global. So, and the buttons of share, I mean, many of the users that may not, you know, English may not be their primary language, still kind of use this currency and vocabulary in their day-to-day activities, which you describe in the book.
Well, Facebook is a global company, but it comes from Silicon Valley. Right. And And it hasn't really extracted itself from that cultural context. And it's definitely part of that scene, that kind of West Coast, kind of techno-utopian scene, for sure.
Okay, we'll talk about Facebook in a second, but let's kind of track back a little bit.
Okay.
You describe a special relationship between the internet and sharing that I thought we kind of already started talking about. Could you tell us more about that?
Yeah. So people say about the internet that that it's always been about sharing.
Mm-hmm.
This is a kind of the trope that you can find in various places. But what I find interesting is that when you look at texts that are, 10 years old, or which isn't even that old, when people talk about the internet as pro-social and as encouraging community and authentic expression and bringing people closer together, which is one of the ways in which the internet was discursively constructed through from the mid-90s and still today is constructed like that, actually you don't find people talking about sharing.
Mm-hmm.
They talk about all sorts of other things like community and collaboration and togetherness and communication and connectivity, but the concept of sharing isn't there. So we think that, we say the internet has always been about sharing, where, I mean, it may feel a bit kind of picky to say, well, they didn't call it sharing back then, but actually for me this is important.
Mm-hmm.
Because if we do now conceive of the internet as about sharing, this is an achievement, this is a discursive accomplishment. And I think it also brings a new, not an entirely new set of values to the internet, but it ties together a set of values that are ignited by the word sharing, maybe in ways that earlier discussions of the internet didn't do.
Mm-hmm. So what are these values?
I think that today when we hear people talk about sharing, the kinds of values that we think about are openness and honesty and reciprocity, mutuality, sincerity, authenticity, maybe. I think these are the kinds of things that we associate with sharing. And maybe not everyone would agree with the idea of reciprocity being part of sharing.
Mm-hmm.
But I think, one can do not very scientific exercises like look the word up on Google Images and see rainbows and children licking ice cream from the same cone or listening to music together on the same set of headphones. I mean, these are the kind of cultural associations we make with sharing. We also very easily hear the word caring together with sharing. So this is a kind of, these are the kinds of values that we identify with sharing. And I think that these are the kinds of values that have been identified with the internet. I mean, people have also identified values to do with, I don't know, like bullying and depression have also been part of the discursive construction of the internet. But if we look at the pro-social sides, then those values have been built into the internet, sometimes quite purposefully. So in my book, I refer to Fred Turner's superb history of the relationship between the counterculture and cyberculture, where he does, for me, a fantastic job of explaining how the internet came to be understood as pro-social. And yet he does that without talking about sharing at all. And that was a book that came out in 2006. So he was writing that, let's say in the first half of the first decade of this century. It was just as his book was coming out that sharing became really, I think, the indispensably related to the internet, and particularly with the explosion of social network sites.
Mm-hmm.
So it's kind of the years 2005 to 2007 when sharing becomes the constitutive activity of social network sites' behaviours. And this is something that we can see if we look at social network sites historically. That's also in the book. It's also in an earlier article where I looked over a period of a decade from 2000 to 2010 at the front pages of 40, 45 social network sites. And you can see that it's in around the years 2005, 6, 7 that the word sharing starts to appear on more and more social network sites. Facebook adopts the word sharing in 2006. I mean, we might think that Facebook has always been about sharing, but in 2004, you can look at screenshots from the front page of Facebook and their about pages. They don't describe themselves as in the sharing business. That comes later in 2006. And it's then that we really associate sharing with what we do online. And now, 10 years later, we might think, well, yeah, the internet has always been about sharing. Right. But actually, it's a word that came not so late, but the internet wasn't all... People involved in the internet and writing about the internet certainly wouldn't have said in the year 2000 that the internet is all about sharing. It's something that we say now, looking back.
So I want to ask you two things, actually. First one is... All right, why then? What happened in around 2006 that we started sharing? And the second thing is, do you find that sharing more online means something about our societies? So do we share more as societies?
Well, we do more of the stuff that is called sharing, right? I mean, we're doing that more. Of course we are.
But you mean that online or offline?
Online.
Online. Mm-hmm.
I mean, I don't know. I can't keep up with the data on how many pictures are uploaded to Facebook and how many email messages are sent every day and so on. I mean, in a way, I think those numbers they're basically meaningless. I mean, they just mean a lot. And okay, so we know that there are a lot of photos shared on Facebook every day and statuses and so on. I think this is also part of a shift towards greater openness, which I think is a theme that runs through the book, mm-hmm. That by sharing online, we are making more of our everyday lives available for public consumption. We're showing more of ourselves to other people. For some people, this is a reason to criticize the young who have no shame and so on. I mean, we don't need to go there. We know that doesn't quite work like that. Mm-hmm. So we are sharing more online, for sure. Are we sharing more offline as well? Well, I think that's harder to answer, because here we start getting into areas where the use of the word sharing is far more contentious. Mm-hmm. Because then we start creeping towards the sharing economy.
Right. Okay, we'll talk about the sharing economy in a second, but I actually want to push you towards one chapter in your book that talks mm-hmm. about the therapeutic culture and a way of sharing our feelings mm-hmm. with one another mm-hmm. offline.
Okay.
And I think maybe that's a way of thinking about how this sharing mm-hmm. online slips into our offline lives, which I think you describe.
Well, I'm sure that when the strategists and the copywriters and of the social network sites in the around 2005 were very heavily adopting the word sharing to describe what goes on mm-hmm. on their websites, then there can be no doubt that they would have been aware that sharing means a kind of intimate, authentic, open communication, that sharing is the type of communication through which we create and sustain intimate relationships. There are examples of social network sites who put the words sharing and caring very close together in their taglines or in their explanations of what it is that you can do on the website. And that, I mean, that just shows exactly how aware they are that this is the effect that they want to achieve. They want to frame social network sites as a place for us to talk about inner feelings, inner states of affairs with other people. They would certainly have been aware of that and trying to achieve that.
Anyways, do you see the kind of proliferation of sharing online as a mirror of processes that are happening, you know, in our lives, or is it a way that to create or to ignite these processes offline because of what's happening online?
Right. Well, I think that there's an extension of processes that have been going on offline for some time when we talk about online sharing. I mean, I go back to the 1930s where we can find a Christian group in the United States called the Oxford Group. This is a kind of forgotten part of the story of the therapeutic culture, I think. I found very little writing about this group apart from one sociological book from the 1950s.
Actually, that was fascinating. Can you tell us a bit about the Oxford Group?
Sure. So the Oxford Group were it was a Christian group, as I said, where what they would do is one of their main practices and distinguishing practices was they would sit together in someone's parlour or drawing room, and they would openly confess to one another their sins. And this act they called sharing. So by this time, by the 1930s, the idea of sharing as a kind of talking was accessible to them. But through the Oxford Group, they institutionalized this idea of sharing as the public declaration of a fault of self. I'm kind of using more modern terminology to because I'm setting this up in so it would be a public declaration of a fault of self, kind of in front of one's peers, for the sake of redemption. And this they called sharing. Now, this practice of people sitting in a circle talking about their faults sounds very much like support groups, because there's a genealogy. Two members of the Oxford Group, who were alcoholics, set up a splinter group where men could talk about their alcoholism in a way that was very similar to the sharing of sins in the Oxford Group. And this actually is how Alcoholics Anonymous was formed. And it also helps us to understand the very spiritual, religious roots of Alcoholics Anonymous, right? And the 12 steps and so on. And from Alcoholics Anonymous, this practice of sharing one's feelings or sharing, again, a fault of self in front of a group of non-judgmental others for the sake of now not necessarily religious redemption, but some kind of psychic redemption. This is, you know, from there it's spread far and wide, and we're all now very familiar with support groups, and we also know what members of an Alcoholics Anonymous group say to their friend who has finished talking about his week and how he has or hasn't drunk, and the way what they say is thank you for sharing. So this is I think these are the origins of or at least part, an important part of the origins of this idea of sharing as a therapeutic type of talk that is authentic and is directed towards our well-being, our subjective well-being. I mean, sometimes in Facebook's own blogs, this is picked up absolutely explicitly, where they say that sharing on Facebook helps us to overcome the kind of alienation that Putnam talks about in Bowling Alone. I mean, here this is, you know, it's completely explicit. But also there are studies of Facebook that show that participation on Facebook increases social capital and enhances the sense of well-being. So, I mean, this is, that kind of studies is kind of less talks to what I'm doing, but it does show that this connection has been made between sharing as a type of talk and this sense of well-being. And there's no doubt that social network sites kind of run with this idea very hard.
Mm-hmm. Okay, before we question that assumption, I just want to steer you towards another kind of sharing that you mentioned in the book and that you mentioned before, and that's the economy, mm-hmm. the sharing economy. Can you talk a bit about that?
Sure. Well, it's, for me, the sharing economy is a really important part of the it's one of the main things that sharing means today. I'm interested in sharing in three main sites. One of them is online social network sites. Another is sharing as this type of talk, particularly intimate talk. And then the third is the work that the word sharing does in the concept of sharing economies. The sharing economy that we know now is not very old. It's a new phenomenon. But when we dig a bit into the literature, we kind of work out, well, how long has this been called the sharing economy? Who called it the sharing economy? We find that it started off more as a economy of production. So people like Yochai Benkler talk about peer-to-peer production and mention things like Wikipedia and other online projects based on collaboration. Mm-hmm. And people like Lawrence Lessig talk about doing stuff for fun, just for the joy of it, that these are kind of things that you do without an expectation of financial reward. So the original use of the term sharing economy, I mean, again, not going very far back, only going back about like 8 or 9 years, talks about the sharing economy as an economy of production. More recently, it's also come to refer to an economy of consumption. Now, when we hear sharing economy, we think Uber and Airbnb.
Right.
Though there are many online initiatives, apps, and startups where the objective behind the initiative is not to make money. Couch surfing, for instance. I mean, it's a bit more complicated today. But when it started out, it's a free kind of fun to do service. Now, like I said, people associate companies like Airbnb and Uber with the sharing economy. These are companies valued at billions of dollars, and where much of the news coverage of them focuses on, say, in the case of Uber, labor exploitation, and in the case of Airbnb, racial discrimination in terms of who you're prepared to let stay in your house. Mm-hmm. And also whether it works both ways, and whether it's been found that black people will receive less money in rent than white people for very similar properties. So these are kind of charges that are laid against companies like Uber and Airbnb, but there's a general sense, and this is something you can see in the press again and again, that whatever is going on in the sharing economy, it isn't really sharing.
It isn't the altruistic act of sharing.
Right. It isn't really sharing, people say, because money is involved.
Right.
because it's selling or it's renting, it's short-term leasing, but it isn't sharing. I mean, I've got plenty to say about that, but let's note that it's the sharing economy because it's digital. I think that this is a really important part of the work that sharing does in the sharing economy. It is picking up from the expansion of sharing into social network sites, and then from there it is being applied to these apps and companies that are sitting on social network sites and sitting on digital communication technologies. And then in some cases you can really see people kind of making these leaps through the help of the word sharing. You can see people saying that because people are sharing online, they're now more inclined to share offline. As if uploading photos to Facebook should make you more inclined to lending your neighbour your power drill, for instance. Excuse me. I'm not sure why that should be the case necessarily. But I think that the word sharing is helping people make these kind of links from across from a communicative sense of sharing, as in I'm going to tell you what I'm doing on Facebook, to a distributive logic of sharing, which is I'll let you use my ladder because I'm not using it now.
So actually I want to suggest something to you after reading the book and our conversation now. As I was reading, I got the sense that sharing might be a concealing concept rather than a revealing one. So businesses such as Facebook use it to conceal the fact that they profit from our willingness to share by selling the information they collect to other companies. Or other businesses like Uber that you mentioned before conceal a system that avoids labor regulation and employee protection. And even users conceal themselves by presenting the best version of me rather than themselves. Do you agree? Do you see that part?
I think there is definitely a sense in which the way that companies like Facebook not only, though, use the word sharing serves to mystify the true relations between, for instance, Facebook and advertisers. So the terms and conditions of companies like Facebook and Google talk about the times when we will or will not share information with third parties, and that might be advertisers or the police, or and clearly, despite my pragmatic approach and despite my efforts not to be a language policeman, there are times when you do want to say Facebook isn't sharing data with advertisers, it really is selling. And in those instances, yes, I think that Facebook is concealing through this word the nature of its relations with other financial bodies. It's also, I think, creating a kind of illusion that Facebook's relations with advertisers are somehow parallel to my relations with my Facebook friends, with whom I also share on Facebook. Uber, by the way, is associated with the sharing economy, but I don't think that's because of anything Uber has done. Uber's website is not about sharing, unlike many other. I mean, Airbnb is all about community. Uber has been put into the sharing economy, and I'm sure it's very happy to be there, but I don't discern an effort on its part to actually present itself as offering sharing, unlike many other companies that do. And again, yes, one could say that we can, you know, and that there are plenty of people who are doing that now, who are writing excellent critical analyses of the sharing economy, and pointing to the ways in which it's exploitation and it's trade and so on. As to whether we present our best selves on social media and we're not authentic, I'm not sure. But in any case, I think that the ideal, as far as the social media are concerned, is for authentic self-expression on their platforms. And I think there is a great deal of authentic self-expression on social media, and there may also be exaggerations and choosing the photo I look best in. That's for sure. But so there I kind of I feel less inclined to go with you in that direction. But even so, in all of these cases, again, what most interests me is that we are is that we're calling it sharing. What the rhetorical work that this does, that interests me, and less bothered with whether it really is or really isn't sharing. Even if we think about social media, the notion of sharing has kind of got long roots in computing. So you can kind of see the moment in the summer of 2006. You can imagine it when Facebook's strategy team said, right, from now on, we're all about sharing. And then in October, they come out with the share button and they have a blog about it. And you can just see it. You just know they had that meeting. But even then, we know that sharing has been part of the terminology of computing since the 1950s, when time sharing was invented, and that had no ideological force behind it. It was because the time of the computer was literally being shared, was being divided. This was a kind of very non-metaphorical sense of sharing. And then disk sharing, because we had access to a remote disk. It was a shared disk, and again, this was kind of very much non-normative, and so the terminology of sharing as meaning the transfer of files of digital information from one place to another is kind of inherent to the world of computing, and it would have come reasonably naturally to the engineers or whatever who were giving names for the features that they were developing, which isn't to say that it doesn't have a kind of ideological sway over us now. It does, but I don't want to go in the direction of a kind of conspiratorial theory that they're calling it sharing so as to pull the wool over our eyes. Maybe some wool is pulled over our eyes some of the time, but I think it was quite natural that these things also should have been called
sharing. I think it was actually following a bit your strand about the Oxford group and the idea of sharing your sins for redemption, whereas I think mostly on social network sites, what we see is more of the sunnier side, and the sins are kind of left, you know, a bit more in the dark. But
no, I think you... Yes. Though there's another bit then we could kind of put in between there, which is sharing as not only being of your faults and sins and your alcoholism and your addictions, but sharing as an authentic form of self-expression
and constitution. So what I would suggest that maybe it's also a way to create the self and constitute it.
Oh, yes. Oh, yeah. This is, I think that's absolutely. I mean, this is how we know who we are nowadays. I mean, this is what it means to live in a therapy culture. We know who we are and we create who we are through talking about who we are. And that may be with our therapist. It may be with our significant other. But yeah, the idea that we find out who we are, we find out who our partner is by communicating about our core self. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that goes beyond talk about problems, mm-hmm. and becomes a requirement for authentic self-expression, mm-hmm. whatever that may be. This was absolutely one of the this is one of the contributions that the hippies gave to the word sharing. That mm-hmm. And this is also when sharing became caring. When you have this idea of self-expression and a kind of other orientation. So then we can make that bridge from sharing your sins to sharing your real you, or sharing your life and sharing your world, which is what social network sites implore us to do.
Okay, I want to keep us a bit still in the darker side of things, I guess. We're talking about all sorts of meanings and practices of sharing. And I want to ask you a bit about malice and sharing. And by that I mean like sharing embarrassing videos of one's partner as revenge, or sharing nude photos of celebrities that somebody had hacked into their, you know, phones, or sharing fake news that we've seen very recently.
Well, what I have as an internet scholar, as a social media scholar, I surely have plenty to say on those practices. Mm-hmm. But within the rather narrower confines of my interest in sharing, what really interests me is the word, is the concept. Mm-hmm. And it may well be that there are that the word is used to describe bad practices, for instance, revenge porn. And we may read in the press about about revenge porn or about fake news, and we may read that such and such a person shared photographs of. Now, that's kind of. For me, in terms of the word, that's fine. I mean, that's what the word means. It has all of these metaphorical senses, but some of them are kind of dying away. Mm-hmm. And so really, one of the things that sharing means today is conveying data through a network, computer network, from one place to another. If you read about a lot of the coverage about the NSA post Snowden was about the sharing of information. I mean, and here the word is kind of, it's not really doing much. Equally, when I set up printer sharing at home so I can print from my laptop, I don't have the warm, fuzzy feeling that the word sharing often has associated with it. And that's fine. I mean, it does have a technical and dry sense as well. And I'm not sure even here that by calling it sharing, people are going to think that it's okay to share embarrassing photos of someone because it's called sharing. I don't think so. So yeah, the word is sometimes used to talk about bad things, but I think that's testimony to the way in which it's become a kind of taken for granted part of our vocabulary for our use of the internet. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I kind of sound like I'm defending the word. I'm not really defending the word, but yeah.
Okay. Finally, I would like to ask you, what do you share? Are you a big sharer?
What do I share? No, I think not. No, because I'm anxious for my privacy.
So thank you for sharing with us your thoughts.
Thank you very
and your
much.
Wonderful book that I think has a lot to say to many of us about the age we live in. Thank you very much.
Thank you.